Welcome to the Conscience of Kansas radio show with Paul A. Ibbotson. A no-nonsense conservative talk show that looks at the local, state, and national issues that affect the people of Kansas. And now, here's Paul A. Ibbotson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Conscience of Kansas radio program. And it's all right to say you're addicted to this program, because I certainly am. We'd like to welcome all the folks from the MySpace Nation, the Facebook Republic, Chimpsy Radio, Net Talk World, all the beautiful patriotic listeners from KSDB Manhattan, the Wildcat 91.9 FM. We'd like to thank all of our online listeners listening to us around the country and the globe at www.wildcat919.com. We'd also like to thank our Podomatic listeners. What are our Podomatic listeners? Those are the folks that sign up and subscribe to the Conscience of Kansas radio program through Google, Yahoo, and iTunes. In the last 7 days, we've had 6,670 subscribers to the program, which makes a grand total of 104,712. Wow. I just want to say a big thank you. We so appreciate it. We're going to have to make a new goal on that, folks. Our goal of 100,000 subscribers to the program we have now surpassed. So we've got to go to that next step, and we are happy to do so. The call-in number to the program is 785-532-0919. The email to the Conscience of Kansas radio program is ibbotson91.9@gmail.com. Our website of superior conservative value is www.ibbotsonusa.com. We want to thank our Blueberry 24/7 listeners, our townhall.com listeners, and of course all the listeners from the Freedom Broadcast Network at www.myfbn.com. We are certainly fortunate to have so many wonderful listeners. And again, the Conscience of Kansas, as we do every week, we bring some of those stimulating conservative minds in the nation right here to the beautiful flatlands of Kansas. And in the first half of the program, we're going to be speaking with David Woodard. He is the author of Why We Whisper: Restoring Our Right to Say It's Wrong. David Woodard holds the Strong Thurmond Chair of Government at Clemson University, where he has taught political science since 1983. He is the author of several books, including The Conservative Tradition in America, The New Southern Politics, and The America That Ronald Reagan Built. David Woodard would like to welcome you to the Conscience of Kansas radio program.
Paul, it's a pleasure to be there.
Well, you know,
I love Kansas. We drove across it a couple of years ago going out to ski in Colorado, and it was a beautiful drive.
Oh, absolutely. Kansas, when you compare it to Colorado, you can drop a level anywhere in this state and almost get the bubble to go to the center. But you get to see a lot of the beautiful pasture lands and plains and wheat and all the beautiful things of Kansas. And David, you know, it's our pleasure to have you on the program. You have a very interesting book here with Why We Whisper. And I was wondering if you could tell our Conscience of Kansas listeners a little bit more about yourself and how you began and got into this book project.
Sure, Paul. Well, my co-author is Senator Jim DeMint, who is the junior senator here in South Carolina, Lindsey Graham being the senior senator. And Jim and I were just old friends who, before he ran for Congress and then for the Senate, we had been associated in politics together. And after he was elected to the Senate, I went up to see him one day and he said, you know, we need to write a book, because we tended to see the world the same way and we had had similar experiences with people being upset because we held conservative views, me on campus and him running for the Senate in 2004. And so we decided that's where we would get started, and that's where we decided we'd work on it. And when I signed a book contract with a United States senator, I didn't expect that he'd have much time to work on it, but Jim is just a hardworking guy. He worked me to death on this book. That's how we got started. And our concerns were that if we lose freedom of speech, and especially if conservatives can no longer in the public square stand up for values like fidelity in marriage and against homosexuality and those kind of things, then we were going to lose our whole culture. And so that's why we wrote the book, both of us that had experiences of trying to do that and being shouted down.
Well, and those are experiences that are shared by many people in this nation. I know of it as well as a conservative radio talk show host, as a writer myself, that you're stepping into the lion's den when you want to champion conservative values, traditional values. And what are some of the main points that you guys make in this book?
Well, Paul, we start off by talking about our two experiences. Actually, Jim was running for United States Senate when he happened to blurt out one day that he didn't think that his children in public schools should be taught by unmarried teachers living with their boyfriends who were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused quite a stir, and then he happened to say some other things. And I had previously been in court cases speaking against gay marriage that was back before when it first got started in the 1990s. So that's how we each share those two chapters at first, and then we sort of talk about the culture wars in America. There's nothing really new in that. But really, Jim and I were putting in kind of tidbits and outrages that we were finding that were really frightening us. So one of the things is the cost that all this was doing. And one of the examples we used were some cheerleaders down in Texas, some of whom were pregnant before the fall started. And actually, the incentive of liberal groups in Texas was for the girls to have abortions so they could go ahead and cheer.
Unbelievable.
And then finally, when some of them didn't, the National Organization of Women and other liberal groups came in and said, well, they still should be allowed to cheer, even though that was in defiance of local statutes that the school board had about whether or not girls could continue to cheer.
Wow.
And of course, what happened is, and Paul, this happens a lot, is that because they were intimidated, the school district backed down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these liberal groups can sometimes just rattle a chain, and these school districts and libraries and other things just don't have the money to fight a court case, so they don't. We spent a whole chapter on the Boy Scouts, of them standing up to having gay scoutmasters. And what we found there is that they had spent millions of dollars defending themselves to try and protect their policies. But, of course, many, especially on the left coast, public schools and public parks were put off limits for the Boy Scouts.
Yeah,
as a result of
been a lot of wrangling to try to run them out of places and manipulations of rents. So when you look at the Boy Scouts, I mean, they're a private organization, right? I mean, they should be able to say who they want as members, what member categories,
right,
and without being harassed or attacked. And it's amazing when we look at the good that they do. They do such wonderful things and have for years, and that they can be pressured and pushed to lose their ability to say who they want to have. It's amazing. You know, and I was talking the other day, David, what your book touches on such a relevant subject. It's so pervasive.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, you're very welcome. And it's what drew me to this. And of course, if folks, you can find this book at www.whywewhisper.com. There's many places you can find: Amazon, Barnes & Noble. We have it linked up for our Conscience of Kansas listeners at our master website of Superior Conservative Values at www.ibbotsonusa.com, at just about every book outlet there is. But I like the website you guys have here at www.whywewhisper.com for several reasons. One, it gives you the outlets where you can buy the book, but you guys also include some accolades from some very, very upstanding conservative stalwarts, including Rush Limbaugh, and who's the gold standard for all of us guys in radio. And so not only is the book being read and being endorsed by influential conservative minds, but you also have on here, which I think is very interesting, is a way to go beyond this book. And it seems to me that that was one of the goals of blog, where people can share their instances of situations that have gone, to sort of speak about them, get them out, converse with others. Tell us a little bit about why you did that.
Well, we originally, I don't think we'll do it anymore, but we had originally envisioned a second volume, which is after what we identified, other people would call in and share their experiences. I mean, I'll just take one of them, the college student who wrote in and said that when she began her Western history course, a Western civilization course, the professor walked in and said, if you believe in God, you have no right that in this class you're just ignorant.
Wow.
And I mean, and those kind of things going on college campuses. Of course, most of us have been on college campuses all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't surprised by some of that. But our book talks about the way this has seeped out, you know, into the culture, into the fact that a city council can't open a meeting with a prayer.
Yeah.
And the Boy Scouts, and, you know, cheerleaders and extracurricular activities in the public schools and in libraries and things like that. That's what we're talking about. And, you know, Paul, of course, there are a lot of conservatives who are alarmed by this, but we also have a lot of apathy in our country, and I think a lot of people's ears are just kind of full right now of hearing this, and they don't really realize how bad things are getting.
Well, absolutely. And that's a very good point. And you talk about moral relativism, and in your book, you know, this idea of moral relativism, whether you call it political correctness or whatever term it goes under, is the idea that we can no longer make judgments about anything. And
right.
That, you know, right and wrong is simply in the eyes of the beholder. If you believe doing some atrocity is okay for you, then it's okay for everyone. And it's a responsibility. Now we're in a point, like you say, where people have almost lost track of what is right and wrong. And we're creating a generation that's going to be living something completely different than what the founding fathers set this country up for. And even what we've had since then, I was talking yesterday with someone and we were talking about your book. And I was telling them, you know, if you took someone from, say, 1950 and you pulled them away from their television set and you rolled them in front of a television set in 2008, they would be traumatized. I think they'd have to go and get counseling. I'm talking about basic cable. You know, what you see today, the standards we have in our culture, what kind of language is used, what kind of sexual scenes are put out there, what kind of anti-American rhetoric is thrown out there. I believe that an individual from the 50s going to today would just be awestruck. Does that seem reasonable?
Well, you're exactly right, Paul, and that's one of the reasons we were writing this book. Of course, Jim and I are both post-war babies, and we said when we were growing up, we had a host of people to support, not just our parents, but our ball coaches, our postmen, our teachers. They had some certain similar values that they instilled in us and saw as regular values. Now then, of course, that's not the case, and there's no one to tell anybody that this is really wrong because we can't force our views on anybody. That's a real serious drift, because if we can't speak, I mean, we've spent some time, Jim and I spent a lot of time talking about how the Nazis came to power in Germany. One of the things that they did is they just made it impolite to criticize them. And that's kind of where we are. You cannot ask questions about some of these left-wing things now. Pity the poor person who stands up and says that we ought to have virgins who get married and no one should have intercourse before then. Because, I mean, practically no one says that. We even have a high school here in South Carolina that has a daycare center on campus.
That's unbelievable. That's just crazy.
It's just gotten ridiculous. And one, we had a principal in this state who resigned because they tried to form a gay and lesbian club, and he said, I'm not going to support that as an official school function. Again, ACLU brought a suit, and he said, okay, I resign as a principal.
Wow.
Those kind of things are happening more and more, and it's just a decay in our culture that's almost unconscionable, and you're exactly right. I will say one thing to you, Paul, and I don't say this casually. We do, Jim and I do a number of these radio interviews, but it is really talk radio that is one of the places where you do have freedom.
Right.
Talk radio is one of the places where you can speak up about these things without fear of reprisal.
Right.
And, you know, of course, the left makes fun of it, but they can't get any talk radio. Only a few Supreme Court justices and some people in Hollywood and some people in the media and on academic campuses believe as they do.
Right. Absolutely. And, of course, they can't at this time. You know, there's a push through the Fairness Doctrine and other ways to try to take away the free market of ideas and to force really muzzling conservative values to the airways. But it is. It's a very good forum, and that's why I'm in it. It's because I found it to be a place where I could get my conservative ideas, and I could bring conservatives that had specialties such as yourself with these books to talk about it. And I think that the country is hungry for an outlet to renew itself back to these original values. I think that this country, it was based and its foundations are on traditional Christian values, and that it's the heart of what has made us great, and that people at their foundations believe in those values. They may not articulate them, they may not have, and that's what's good about it. A book like yours, it gives some articulation to be able to really put voice to these thoughts that we have, these gut feelings that, man, where's the country going to? Or, man, what I'm seeing here in this media outlet or in this forum is so against what I believe or what I believe must be right. So it's the beginning of that. And that's why I think that it's good for a book like this. And I would be pushing you in a direction to keep writing on this. Now, it looks like you have some other very interesting books that I'm going to have to get into as well that you've been writing. But, you know, let's talk just for a moment about academia and this interesting world in which I'm living in, but you've lived in for even longer.
Right.
What is it like to be an individual that writes conservative books, that writes books on traditional values for a professor in academia?
Well, Paul, you just better not ever expect to get asked to be a department head or a dean or any academic position. But to tell you the truth, my experience, I think probably the same thing can be said of anybody who stands up on Kansas State campus, is that the students are with you. Their parents are with you. Most of the legislators and elected officials in a place like Kansas and South Carolina are with you. It's just that the administration, the people at the top, some of your colleagues are against you. The problem, as I see it, is this. If you come out with conservative values, say out of high school and go to college, they're immediately moderated in most liberal arts classes.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you choose to go to graduate school and you pick a good graduate school, well, graduate degrees are mostly becoming a member of the class. club, and you have to either be quiet or moderate your views to get a graduate degree. And if you go out into the job market in academia and you're lucky enough to be hired as an assistant professor, you really have a 12-year march until you're a full professor before you can speak up.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I see is a lot of people just get worn down by the process. They don't. You don't want to spend 4 or 5 years in graduate school and not get the degree, and so you keep your mouth shut.
Right.
Then when you get the degree, you go out and you're seeking to get tenure after 6 years. You again keep your mouth shut.
And that's unfortunate because at that point you're required to publish so much.
Right.
So you've got to be a writing machine. And what do you write about that you can feel good about and not, you know, inject some of yourself, your own values into it? But go ahead.
Well, sometimes, I mean, some of these disciplines like psychology, sociology, and political science are so esoteric that by the time you finally get written, first, nobody reads it. And secondly, it's so divorced from reality, it's really no use. I mean, I've written most of my books when I got to be a full professor because I was immune to any criticism.
That is so true. That is so true. I know where you're coming from, and it makes sense, you know, but that's a long waiting period. That's a long waiting period to have to stay silent about that. And I've seen it in academia. You know, I'm finishing a PhD in sociology, and I started out in my master's and bachelor's are in criminal justice. I'm a former Kansas chief of police, and I've seen lots of what I call conservative professors in hiding,
laid back,
and you get the telltale signs that they understand things that they don't articulate. It's a very, very interesting concept, and it's very interesting for people to see how an individual in academia or, you know, in other areas, how they live the conservative life and how they deal with it, because it's not easy. It's not, you're swimming against a stream, but I guess in the end, the question is, does the stream have to be going against you? And I really think that this country can take a shift back. There was a time when a lot of the things that are going on today would have been taboo.
Right.
And we have found ourselves sliding into this shift that can be brought back. And I think it's a battle that's for the hearts and minds. I believe that we can win that by having people come to the understanding, one of the conservative within them, and that these traditional values can be articulated by many, and we can actually turn the tide. It's going to be hard because there are entrenched groups like the ACLU. There are other entrenched special interest groups that have to be overcome. But I'm optimistic.
I'm
optimistic because of books like yours, David, and that they are out there. And if I look at it, if people like you can stand up, then others will as well. And I stand in line with them.
Well, I think you're generally right. I mean, really, the left only has a lock on three institutions in American society, and that's Hollywood, the media, and academia. Now, those are significant institutions. I'm not trying to minimize them.
Right.
But you can't take the values you learned in a philosophy class, or no offense to your discipline of sociology, and really perform in the business sector, or perform if you had to start a business, or you had to run an organization, and you couldn't treat people like dirt. You'd have to treat them with dignity and respect, and you know, and people don't live the way that they're oftentimes taught in the very kind of unusual disciplines on college campus. And another thing that I think you should do when you finish your degree is just go to war against the academy. I mean, I have found that my colleagues don't necessarily agree with me, but they learn to respect you.
Right.
Because they realize that you're articulate and you have these positions and they know where they come from. And, I mean, I try and write a lot. I wrote here in the school paper and just on our campus to try and speak against some of these things. And I think, by and large, if we can get enough people doing this at different levels, I think we could really turn things around.
Oh, I agree. I definitely agree, and I think this is a good start. For it, ladies and gentlemen, we've been speaking to David Woodard. He is the co-author of Why We Whisper, Restoring Our Rights to Say It's Wrong. You can find this book at Amazon and as well as Barnes & Noble and all your major book outlets. You can also find it at www.whywewhisper.com. We have it linked on our master website of conservative politics here at www.ibbotsonusa.com. So everybody can find it. We're going to keep it up there for a long time, David, because we want people to be able to find this book. And I think it's a great endeavor. And there are so many people echoing what you guys are doing. And so I think very worthwhile. And I would just encourage you not to throw away a sequel book thought. If it grows,
thank Paul.
Well, you're welcome.
Jim and I formed a wonderful bond doing this. It was a lot of fun. Jim was one of the few people, you know, who voted against the president's immigration bill. Well, of course, it was a majority. It failed in the Senate.
Right.
And during that debate, he emailed me from the floor on his BlackBerry, and he said, "I'll get you that other chapter as soon as I can get through with this stupid immigration debate." I said, "Jim, we sent you to Washington to do the immigration
Absolutely,
debate.
Yeah.
Stay on the floor." I mean, he and Washington, of course, has he was one of the people who voted against the bailout in the Senate mm-hmm. side this time, too. I mean, he's just a very, very good guy, very winsome guy, very easy guy to work with, but just very principled. And you just push him so far, and you don't push him any further. And it's been a pleasure to work with him and see the way that he has blossomed in Washington. And,
well, absolutely. I think that we would fall in line on all those issues, and I would just ask you to send my encouragements on to him as well, because these are hard times, and this is the time for a book like this. And ladies and gentlemen, again, the book is Why We Whisper, Restoring Our Right to Say It's Wrong. We need to have this voice. We need to encourage others to not be silent, but to stand up for traditional values here in America. And David Woodard, we want to thank you for coming on the Conscience of Kansas radio program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, just got done speaking to David Woodard. He is the author, the co-author with Senator DeMint on Why We Whisper, Restoring a Right to Say It's Wrong. What a great book. What a great individual. What a wonderful endeavor they're involved in. I hope they keep that up. And folks, you're going to be able to find that book on our master website of Superior Conservative Values. There I go, at www.ibbotsonusa.com. All right, we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. And in the second half of the program, we're going to be speaking to David Petrucia. We had him on before, but we're coming back with another book that he has authored called Silent Cal's Almanac, The Homespun Wit and Wisdom of Vermont's Calvin Coolidge. What a interesting book it's going to be. We're also going to talk about neighborhoods. What you find in your neighborhood, what you don't find in your neighborhood, and what maybe you should find in your neighborhood tied into politics. It's going to be very interesting as well. We want to invite all of our listeners to visit our master website of Superior Conservative Values at www.ibbotsonusa.com. We really appreciate Dante Joseph and all the work that he does for our website. It's just a wonderful endeavor that he puts in. He does such a great job on all those. We're also going to run for you our Conscience of Kansas new commercial we have that we had done up by Jeff Brown from the production department. Help from Paul Shanklin, the funny man for Rush Limbaugh, from our interview. We pulled a little snippet. We think it's funny. We think you'll find it's funny as well. And so we're going to go to commercial break just a little bit early. And when we come back, we're going to talk about neighborhoods. To start out the show, we're going to talk about Joe the Plumber and some other things of interest with our presidential election that's coming up. I know it's outside our beautiful bay window here at Kansas State University. They are collecting votes at this time, pre-votes here in Kansas, the beautiful flatlands. I wonder what people are voting at those spots and who they're voting for. And would you want them as a neighbor? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. All right, folks, we're going to go to commercial break. We'll be back in just a few minutes on the Conscience of Kansas radio program. My name is Paul A. Ibbotson. We appreciate your listenership.
The Conscience of Kansas with Paul A. Ibbotson. We'll be right back in a moment.
I've got a perfect puzzle for you.
The Wildcat 91.9 is happy to present the Conscience of Kansas radio show.
Kansas State Democrats, this is Barack Obama. Now look, I understand that you're probably still hungover from the weekend, but that's no reason to take it out on this show. Go out and do something for your neighbor. Fill his tires with air. I've learned that filling tires with air is important. You know, if tires don't have any air in them, you're not going to get as good a gas mileage. They also make that ka-wonk, ka-wonk, ka-wonk sound, you know, when you're, and eventually they burn up and fall off your car. You've probably seen one of those on the side of the road where somebody, some fool, had a flat tire and just kept driving. So don't do that. Help somebody out, you know, help a child to cross the road. Don't forget to change your baby's diaper. You could do that.
Knocking the liberal out of Tuesday every week at 5 o'clock. The Conscience of Kansas with Paul A. Ibbotson on the Wildcat 91.9. It's where America meets. Welcome back to the Conscience of Kansas on the Wildcat 91.9.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Conscience of Kansas Radio Show. Yes, indeed, every day with you. Talking about conservative values is pure magic, and we really appreciate your listenership. I'd like to say a special thanks to the Liberty Republican Club for listening to the program today via the internet at www.wildcat919.com. That's wildcat919.com. They hit the Listen Live button up at the top of the website, and you are hooked up, bam, set to listen to the Conscience of Kansas Radio program. We'd also like to say thank you to all those Podomatic listeners as well. Again, our call-in number to the program today is 785-532-0919. We welcome your calls into the program. All right, we're going to talk about neighbors. You know, we've all got good neighbors, bad neighbors, and how does it fit into politics? Well, very interesting, and we are going to take a look at that question right now.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you, so let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?
Hello there, neighbor. My name is Paul A. Ibbotson. You know, I got to admit, got to come clean just a little bit. That song kind of freaks me out just a little bit. I don't know if you guys remember Mr. Rogers' show, but he gave me the heebie-jeebies. You know, to me, this guy screamed pedophile. And I suppose that's wrong to say, but I used to watch this guy when I was a police officer, and I used to think, that's just what the pedophile do. You know, you open the door and you get the kid to come in, you know, please won't you be, you're going to be my freaking neighbor. It's going to happen. You know, and he'd lead the kids in while he's stripping down into his comfortable clothes. I always thought to myself, we're going to, you know, do a search warrant on Mr. Rogers' house. We're going to find about 10 kids in the basement, you know, stuff. But anyway, let's get past that. Let's move on. That may be a personal problem with myself here. In your neighborhood, what you're going to find in your neighborhood? Well, you know, a lot of times we find strange things in our neighborhoods. Joe the plumber, you know, he came out and had Barack Obama come to his neighborhood wanting to get votes, and Barack had a little chat with him. And, you know, strange things happen when you have those chats. And it was hard for Joe the plumber. You know, and I felt really bad for how bad other people felt for Joe. It really bothered me to see people struggle with the fact that he was attacked and put in such a bad way by this Barack Obama guy. And, well, here you know, it looks like we've made the phone ring here at the Conscience of Kansas radio program. Let's answer it and just see who we have today. All right, caller, you're live on the Conscience of Kansas radio program.
Hello, Paul. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Is this Dr. Hans Matata?
It is Dr. Hans Matata, Paul. It's so good to speak to you. It has been quite a while since we spoke last.
Well, it certainly has. What's been going on with you?
Well, Paul, I have finally been able to return to Mother Sweden. As last we spoke, you know, I had to go on a bit of a hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finally home. And I've been watching a lot of what's going on with this presidential campaign that's going on in your country there, and I guess there's a few things I'd like to speak with you about.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Well, Paul, I was curious if you've heard about Joe the Plumber.
Yes, I've been watching quite a bit of stuff with him lately.
Well, I've been watching him on the television. I don't know, Paul, if I've told you about my lavish chateau here in Sweden, but we just have a lovely new plasma screen television that has been installed here, and I've been watching the news the whole time, and I've seen lots of this Joseph Plummer on there. And one day I was watching him on the television, and I had another one of my visions.
Oh, my goodness. What was your vision about?
Well, what I saw was, and give me a moment, I sometimes get a bit shaky when I'm communicating the visions, Paul, so
all
bear
right.
with me.
All right, no problem.
What I saw was, I saw a vision that Barack Obama was president, and
yeah.
Joe DiPlomo was in the crapper.
Well, now, Joe is a plumber.
Well, it wasn't that kind of a crapper, Paul. It was more of an economic crapper. But soon I passed gas, and then I saw that McCain would be president, and Obama will actually be flushed.
Well, very good.
Well, hold on, Paul. I'm seeing you having another vision. Hold on, just a moment.
Oh yes.
It's clear. It's coming to me. Oh wait, it's going away. Paul, it's gone. It's gone. I don't have it. I'm going to have to take some more time off, probably, to try to decipher things and get some more visions together and report back to you at a later date.
Well, we will wait with bated breath for your next revelations. Thank you very much, Dr. Hans Batata.
Thank you, Paul.
We'll catch you later.
Be sure to get out and vote.
Oh, definitely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, an unexpected call from Dr. Hans Batata. He is our radio exorcist, our radio therapist, cleanses the waves, bringing back revelations, election revelations on Joe the Plumber. Very interesting. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to try to take another call real quick. Hello, caller. You're live on the Conscience of Kansas. Are you there?
Yeah, Paul, I'm here. I just was wondering if you knew that Dr. Hans Batata wasn't really on hiatus.
Oh, where is he?
He's doing cheap plastic surgery in Mexico.
Well, that's quite a revelation. I know he moves around a lot, and he does a lot of interesting work. But in Mexico, wow,
yeah.
have you been down that way?
No, but his mother's a member in the congregation at my church, and I, you know, her breast implants have just really gone to pot.
Well,
and I think that was his work there.
Well, you know, I suspect that if Obama gets in as president, they'll probably have a implant tax break for those people to get them fixed up. But a very interesting caller. We appreciate the update on Hans Batata. You have a wonderful day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you know, callers, hey, keeping up with Dr. Hans Batata. He's pretty big and pretty well-known, and maybe he shot down from Sweden to Mexico. You never know. But, you know, when we're talking about neighbors, and we talk about who you're going to run into, it's a very interesting situation because you have Joe the Plumber taking such a rap for questioning someone like Barack Obama, who comes into his own neighborhood. And yet no one wants to question Barack Obama for the terrorists that he worked with in his neighborhood. You know, Barack Obama would say, you know, William Ayers, yeah, part of the world, they're underground. Terrorist, blew up installations in America, said he didn't do enough. Just a guy in my neighborhood. Just a guy in my neighborhood. As though someone else could give that answer and it would be okay. If John McCain said, well, you know, yeah, I did work with the Ku Klux Klan a lot, but hey, they're just in the neighborhood, you know, down the street, you know, no big deal. Of course, that answer would not be accepted. Well, you know, it's time, I think, that we throw out some of this ridiculous answers that people give you. And that goes to all the different groups. You know, the Democratic Party seems to pander a lot to the minority groups, and they get a very high voting turnout from them. And I ran across a guy that really lays it out. He's from 20-pound Sledge. He's a band member out of California. The guy calls himself Zoe. He's part of Macho Sauce Production. And he really lays out an interesting vision of his own thoughts on conservatism. He is a patriot, I think, a African-American American, a patriot, a conservative, a Republican that talks about his views. And I kept seeing his videos on the MySpace Nation where so many of my conservative brethren are at, and I hadn't clicked on any of his videos. I looked down and I saw 500,000 hits on one of his videos, and I clicked it on, and he really articulates a very interesting thought on how African Americans and many of the people that are really wooed into the Democrat Party, wooed by Barack Obama and this hope change that we hear so much about, how you might have a different perspective. He gives it out. It's very interesting. I'm going to give him some of our precious time together here on the Conscience of Kansas. This is 20-pound Sledge, Macho Sauce Reproduction from YouTube, here to the Conscience of Kansas radio program.
Welcome to McCain Burger. Can I take your order, please?
Why, yes. I'd like a McCain Burger with cheese. So I'm going to go with that McPayless shaking thighs, baby. Now, the reason why I'm voting for John McCain is because McCain and I are pretty much like this on the issues. You know what I'm saying?
And Sarah Palin and I are like this on issues. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh, the Obama supporters are going to foam at the mouth for that comment. Look, y'all, I'm a pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, tax-cutting Christian conservative, yada, yada, yada. Yo, y'all, the policies that I support, Obama does not. That's why I'm not voting for him, period. Doesn't have anything to do with him being black. Ain't no Uncle Tom syndrome going on here or anything like that. Abortion ain't a racial issue, even though American abortion was founded in bigotry. Shoot, they got Planned Parenthood set up in the black community like spider webs. But nonetheless, abortion kills any child that comes its way. Taxes aren't a black or a white issue. The Second Amendment ain't a black or a white issue. Traditional marriage isn't a black or a white issue. These are not issues that any ethnic group can lay claim to. Now, I know what some of y'all are saying. Y'all probably saying, oh, just because he got money and he one of them rich folks, he thinks he's a Republican now. Man, it's hilarious that I get accused of being rich just because I'm a Republican. Oprah's rich, she's not a Republican. Diddy's rich, Ludacris is rich, Kanye is rich. How come y'all don't complain about them being rich? Shoot, y'all, I've been driving the same Ford Ranger since 2001. And what has these rich black Democrats done for you anyway? Have they come into your community and done anything for you? Chances are good that the closest Ludacris has been to your neighborhood is through your television set. Ludacris is in your TV right now helping a little girl get pregnant. Because as far as Luda's concerned, she's a hoe. And most of the other little boys that listen to Luda think she's a hoe too. Now chances are that little girl's going to end up at Planned Parenthood. Or she's going to end up raising that little kid on her own. Because those little boys that listen to Luda want to be like Luda. And you can't be tied down by one woman. So go complain to them about their wealth, because I ain't the one. Now let's put an end to this myth that the Democrat Party is the party of the working class. We're the party of the working class. Y'all know good and well that a great percentage of your voter base are welfare recipients. Ask anybody who pulls a welfare check, y'all. If they vote at all, they vote Democrat. Now look, y'all, everybody needs a hand at some point. We Republicans understand that at some point in everybody's life that somebody needs a hand. But you got people that live off handouts, and that's weak, y'all. Now, I've had people accusing me of being a Republican because I'm a product of some right-wing propaganda machine. And I'm pretty sure they're going to continue with that because I'm voting for McCain and Palin. Number one, what right-wing propaganda machine? Don't y'all know that there's more money and more propaganda in being against America, against the war, and against Bush? Please allow me to enlighten you to something. My mama is a Democrat. She was raised with 16 siblings. And all of her siblings are Democrats. All the cousins that I know about. Democrats. Now this is just my mama's side. I got a big family. My father is also a Democrat. He was raised with 7 other siblings. All of them, Democrat. All my cousins, the ones that I know about, all Democrat. I got a big family. I come from a huge family of Democrats. That's brainwashing level number one. I live in California, just about the most liberal state in the union. I'm surrounded by liberals. Brainwashing level number two. I'm in a state loaded with Democrats. For 16 plus years, I have learned from the public school system, a system that is beset on indoctrinating our children with liberalism. Brainwashing level number three, our public school system that is run by the Liberal Democrat Party and has been for decades. Y'all, I was raised on Sesame Street, and I love Sesame Street, but it's a liberal show. I'm a musician. I've played in bands in Hollywood. And everybody knows that the entertainment industry and the news industry is dominated by liberals. Now, the things that I just mentioned constitute a Goliath-sized brainwashing machine. But I escaped the plantation. You haven't. You've got these liberals that are constantly accusing me of being a product of some right-wing propaganda machine or a right-wing propagandist myself. Yet despite their constant accusation, they've yet to tell me who this right-wing propaganda machine is that I'm submitted to. You can't tell me who I'm submitted to. I can tell you who you're submitted to. I just told you. And if you want to go into real detail as far as who the real propaganda machine is, hey, please go watch my video, The O-Team. I'm a free thinker, y'all. It's you liberals who are submitted to pop culture conformity. So let it be known, y'all, the powers that be don't have me. They got you. They have been farming your votes for decades. For you are ballot cattle for the Democrat Party. It keeps their livestock fat with a healthy dose of pandering. Here's some feed for your victim mentality. Here's some feed to keep your prejudice against the Republicans so you'll vote against them and vote Democrat instead. Here's some feed to stimulate your animosity against the rich as if a poor person can give you a job. Democrats keep that livestock fat with them welfare checks and in food stamps. They hear the dependents come right on time on the 1st and the 15th like chickens running out to the yard waiting to peck that feed. Here, sucker, 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 sucker. Y'all, they got you. They been had you. The system that you hate so much is the very system that you keep giving power to. And right now, Obama is the face of that power. And this power is enforced by many agents, y'all. From Keith Olbermann to Dick. from John Stewart to Barbara Walters. It pains me to see y'all still on the plantation with chains on your brain. I escaped, y'all, and I'm trying to come back and pick the lock on them shackles that you still have on you. You know, when people put crabs in a bucket, they don't have to put a lid on it. You know why? Because if a crab tries to crawl out, another crab will grab it and pull it back down in there with it. And that's what liberals are like. You got a brother that tries to climb out of the bucket, and you got another hater that'll pull him right back into that bucket, back into that bucket of blame and victimhood. These same liberal victims say stuff like, oh, McCain doesn't know what it's like to go through the pain that we go through. But in your selfishness, you forget that it's the other way around. You have no idea of the pain that John McCain went through. The price that John McCain paid for his country, you couldn't even pay the taxes on it. Yeah, John McCain knows what it's like to be broke and broken. I'm talking everything broken except for his spirit. Now, do I think that John McCain is a dirty dog for leaving his wife? Yeah, I do. For sickness and in health, for rich and for poor, till death, John. I just don't know what to think about the Democrat Party, though, who accuses us conservatives of being judgmental, yet they sit in judgment of us all the time. If you look in a dictionary and you look up conservatism or look up Christianity, neither one of them are synonymous with being perfect. Even when Bill Clinton was cheating on his wife, no conservative thought that he should be impeached because of that, despite what the media tried to make you think. The reason why he faced impeachment, y'all, is because he lied about it in court. It don't matter what you lie about. You could lie about stealing the last spoonful of peanut butter. You don't lie about it in court. And what do y'all care that John McCain left his wife? Your party is the one responsible for the normality of the single mom. You got liberals that feel that a child should be put to death if it were to be wheelchair bound, yet they're mad at McCain because he left his wife. Now, what are liberals trying to say now that McCain is afraid to face Obama in the debates? Y'all, McCain faced 5 years of torture. He ain't afraid to face Obama in the debate. My point is just this, y'all. Your perspective from your seat of judgment is just very askew. I'll give you another example. Your party is the party that wants to make all drug use legal. Obama has made it very clear that he experimented with drugs, from marijuana to cocaine. But y'all forgive Obama like it ain't no thing. But y'all want to hold a DUI against George Bush that he got 25 plus years ago. You're the party that glorifies drug use. You're the party that looks up to people who get loaded and write songs. You're the party that celebrates drunken rebellion. George Bush should be your hero. These Hollywood liberals talk about how much they hate war and guns so much. But despite how much they hate war and guns, hey, try this. The next time you go into a video store, I want you to take a good look at all the covers of the DVD boxes and see if you don't see those same Hollywood liberals posing on the front with a gun in their hand. They talk about how much they hate war and there's never an excuse for it and war is wrong and all that sort of stuff, but they love to make war look cool on the screen, don't they? They'll try to tell you that torture is wrong, and then they'll put out a movie like V, where Natalie Portman actually becomes enlightened from torture, and not only that, she falls in love with the person who was torturing her. Can y'all see what I'm talking about when I say that these liberals are really backwards? You know, things like kill the innocent child in the womb, but save the guilty murderer. Now, Matt Damon, I think you should be more gracious towards Sarah Palin, because if she would have known you back in the day and would have known that your prognosis would have made you the mental handicap that you are today, she still would have even supported your right to live. And Pamela Anderson, girl, you can't step up to Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin's head is packed with something real and something beautiful, while you're packed with something fake, but arguably beautiful. Now, the sad part is that liberals are going to see me as the angry one, and I'm the one coming out and saying all this stuff, when they forget that they're the ones who attack us in the first place. Y'all, I'm defending my own. Don't start none, won't be none. Hey, I ain't got nothing to say if you guys don't attack us. Not only do you guys attack us, you attack us with no class. And what is it with you liberals and incest, man? Not just the SNL thing, but even Seth Green with Robot Chicken, where the Bush twins are getting drunk and making out with each other. What's up? Or Family Guy, where the daughter is making out with the family dog. What? And don't even try to compare stuff like that with Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, don't really need to say much more than that. That is a 20-pound sledge of Macho Sauce Production. You can find them on YouTube. You can find them on MySpace. You can find them on Facebook, all over. This young man has a lot to say. I think he says it well. He stands up tall. I like people that are creative, that will stand up for what they believe in, will champion conservative values, and do it in unique ways. I like thinkers, and he definitely is. I thought his speech he gave there was very inspirational. I think he hits it on the head. I'm sure it's going to make a lot of people angry, because it always makes people angry when the truth is told, but we need to hear it. We're down wire. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right into our interview with David Perdue. Petrucha, David Petrucha, with his book Silent Cal's Almanac at this time. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we have a return guest, a very special guest in David Petrucha. We had him on the program not too long ago talking about his book 1960, LBJ versus JFK versus Nixon. It's a very interesting website at www.davidpetrucha.com, and that's spelled P-I-E-T-R-U-S-Z-A. And David, we'd like to welcome you back again to the Conscience of Kansas radio program.
Good to be back.
Well, you know, we had really positive feedback from our listeners here, both at Kansas State University and Florida and all the places where the Conscience of Kansas radio program plays on our first interview we had. And today we're talking a little bit about a different book of yours called Silent Cal's Almanac, The Homespun Wit and Wisdom of Vermont's Calvin Coolidge. It's another very interesting book. And as we segue into that, I was wondering, David, if you might tell our Conscience of Kansas listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into what has been just a very prolific writing career.
Oh, well, my writing career took off in earnest maybe 15 years ago when I started to write sports, specifically baseball, actually more baseball than really sports. And I became the editor of Total Sports Publishing along the way.
Yes.
And we did a number of sports histories. I was the co-editor of Total Baseball, the official encyclopedia of Major League Baseball, and the national president of the Society for American Baseball Research. I had the honor of co-writing with Ted Williams his last book, Ted Williams, My Life in Pictures. That was quite an experience.
Wow.
And but I had 2 degrees in history, and I wanted to get back to doing that, and I accomplished that, or got on the road to doing it, by doing a book called Rothstein, The Lifetimes and Murder of the Criminal Genius Who Fixed the 1919 World Series. Then I was hoping to do a book about New York City in the 1920s. Couldn't quite figure out how to go about doing it, or actually what piece of New York City in the 20s to take, and also how to convince a publisher that a baseball guy should do this.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the segue to that. When you got into Arnold Rothstein, you got into gambling and sports and politics and racketeering and all sorts of interesting stuff, even Broadway. So that got me going, and from there it was on a book called 1920, The Year of the Six Presidents, which was in the 1920 presidential election, and from there to 1960, which we talked about maybe a month ago on your show, which was about LBJ, JFK, and Nixon, basically following the same format with fewer characters, but with some really big dollops of controversy and character.
Well, very interesting. You know, it's very interesting to follow and look at your history, and folks can read and see a lot of these books at your website at www.davidpetrucha. And, you know, you've edited or authored over 30 different books. That's a lot of writing.
That's a lot, yeah.
I just finished book number 2. And so I can tell you that from a writer's perspective, that is a tremendous amount of writing. And, you know, the output, the product of that is some very interesting book. When we look at and think about Rothstein, that is an interesting part of history that a lot of people overlook, but, you know, going in and looking at sort of an intricate piece of this is extremely interested, and it's made me want to go back and look at some of these other books. But segueing into Silent Cal, tell us a little bit about this book, Silent Cal's Almanac, The Homespun Wit and Wisdom of Vermont's Calvin Coolidge.
I've always been interested in Coolidge, both in terms of ideology and in terms of personality. I certainly favor his overriding impulse for economy and government, because when you take that money, you're taking it from people who have worked hard for it, play with these redistributionist schemes or whatever, and you're still taking money out of productive sectors of the economy. And when you inject government money and tax policy into the economy, it distorts it. And if we haven't seen a lesson in that in the mortgage mm-hmm. mess we've created, and with other disincentives because of tax policies and such, I mean, we really should recognize it now, whether we are or not. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that is certainly one of the lessons of history. And also that even though you're listeners may not be able to grasp this intuitively, I'm basically a very shy person, and I identify with Silent Cal's reticence in many cases, and the fact that he was able to transcend that and go into a real people business of politics. I can tell you, one of the things things I did along the way was to be elected to the city council and to be the first member of my party, the Republican Party, to be elected in my ward for 65 years.
Wow.
And I can tell you, going door to door and knocking on those doors is hard. To tell people, vote for me, is even harder.
Right.
And so I identified with what Calvin Coolidge had to overcome to do that.
Absolutely. It is quite an adventure to go into politics where you're going to be in the public eye, where you have to do a lot of public speaking, to be scrutinized. You have to think on your feet, and it's a difference from writing in different places where your voice is heard from a different vantage point. And
so, a lot of different skill sets.
Absolutely.
Involved in communication.
I was a former Kansas chief of police, and I had to go to these council meetings.
And, whoa!
We're looking at small rural Kansas, and those are every bit as much involved and vicious and all these different facets as you would have in any major city. And so it's an adventure.
It's very good training for anything you would want. As they say, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. And really, it's very good training for thinking on your feet and having the courage to think on your feet and say what needs to be said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, a lot of people, when we look at Calvin Coolidge, a lot of people don't even know who this man is. They might have had in history lessons, may have ran across the name, may have had to memorize it in some kind of chronological lineage of public servants, but really don't know anything about the individual himself. And tell us a little bit about the uniqueness of this man.
Well, he came from Vermont, as the subtitle says, the homespun wit and wisdom of Vermont's Calvin Coolidge, and it's the Green Mountain State and very, very rural Vermont, this Plymouth Notch where he comes from, which shapes him. And it's a beautiful area. I've been there many times. I just love it. It is when he talks about it in such poetic terms, you realize he's not, well, Calvin Coolidge never overstates anything, and he didn't overstate the colic nature and wonder of where he came from. And also a very self-sufficient, it was the quintessential Yankee sort of culture, reticent like him, terse, and very frugal. And he even then was a bit of a throwback, where things were sort of modernizing at that point, and he retained that sort of stereotypical Yankee frugality and terseness and a very sharp wit as well. But he moves down, goes to school in Massachusetts, sets up a law practice, and starts climbing that rung from county committeeman, city committeeman, to alderman, to mayor, or state representative, senator, lieutenant governor, vice president, and president. He probably holds more different elective offices, he does, than any other president of the United States, and he may have held more different elective offices than any American.
Wow.
You know, unless, you know, somebody was like dog catcher and highway superintendent in like Mayberry or something.
Right, right.
But otherwise, he was the one guy, they say, you know, start small and climb up the rung, and actually most people who reach the top parts of the rung don't do that. They start out in Harvard.
Right.
And they skip all those lower rungs. But Coolidge did not. And along the way, I think that gave him further grounding, because he had to deal with paving the streets and making budgets balance and such, so that when he reached the presidency, he still knew that was the people's money and that they and how hard they had worked for it. And he lived very frugally. He lived in a two-family house. He rented the one half of it in Northampton, Massachusetts, where he lived and was mayor. And I've been inside of it, and it's very, very modest. So he not only talked the talk, he walked the walk in terms of how you should live. And they said, why don't you move out of this place? And he said, by living here, I don't have to worry about living beyond my means, and I don't have to sell out my principles.
Yeah.
To hold office, because holding office isn't that important. I can survive.
Wow. Well, you know, what important statements and important thoughts, and, you know, in many ways, those are some characteristics and virtues that may be getting lost in politics today, and they're very important. You know, if I'm correct, Coolidge, like all of us, had to suffer many things. I believe he lost a son.
Right.
What was the story with that?
He had two sons, John Coolidge, who died very recently. I met him a few times.
Wow.
He was somewhat like Calvin. He was kind of terse, although he could get wound up on occasion. And the younger son, Calvin Jr., who was much more outgoing, much more like the mother, Grace Goodhue Coolidge, who, by the way, is a blood relative of the columnist Cal Thomas.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's why Cal Thomas is named Cal.
I'll be talking about.
He was only about 12 in 1924. His father was president, running for a term in his own right, and the two sons were playing tennis on the White House tennis court. Cal Jr. did not wear socks. He just had his sneakers on. He developed a blister before the days of antibiotics. It became infected, and he was soon seriously ill, and within a week, he was dead.
Wow.
He was dead, and that really took the steam out of Coolidge. And, of course, campaigns were different then. And campaigns were very different for sitting presidents, where there was a certain aura about the dignity of the office. So you would not go out there like Harry Truman in 1948 and whistle stop. You'd sort of act more like a president, less like a candidate. But that took a lot of the personal steam out of Calvin Coolidge's personal life, where it overshadowed. People say it overshadowed the rest of his presidency. I mean, he still kept to his program, and in fact, the majority of his tax-cutting program was achieved after the death of his son. But it certainly took a great deal of the joy out of his life. And shortly thereafter, his father, who he was extremely close to, died. So he took that double hit at that point.
Wow.
And I think he did not care to run anyway in 1928, and he did not. And that's when he gave that famous statement, I do not choose to run.
Right. Well, you know, one of the very interesting things about this book is it has an elaborate and lengthy photo spot in it where you can really get the Coolidge family photo album. And good writers lay out a picture that you can see in your mind, but it's also very, very helpful to be able to see these real photos. And it's very, very interesting from these photos, get a flavor for the time, for the culture through the clothing and even just the photography, the stages, the non-smiling faces, which was the traditional photo poses for that time period, but the homes, the constructions, everything is very, very interesting. I found it to be an area that I spent a considerable time looking at. What was it like to collect and put this very interesting photo collection together?
A number of them were familiar to me beforehand, and then I had a great deal of fun looking through the collections of the Library of Congress to add to that. But yeah, I'm not so egotistical to think that my words are the most brilliant or illuminating in telling a historical study. And what I like to do is often let the people speak for themselves in this book a great deal, because it is in large part a question of quotes by Coolidge, and his are marvelous. But also, there had been a previous selection of Coolidge quotes, maybe 10 years ago, but they did not include that photo essay at the back. And like you say, I mean, I could tell you what things looked like in Coolidge's Vermont, or maybe in the 1920s, or the sort of Coolidge dour expression, or how vivacious, how absolutely vivacious his wife Grace was. But the pictures really add an extra facet to the story. I'm so very glad I included
them. I am too, and I think that readers that look at this book, Silent Cal's Almanac, The Homespun Wit and Wisdom of Vermont's Calvin Coolidge, not only get a personal flair and begin, probably for many people, a relationship of learning on this individual that would be lost in time without researchers like yourself that go back and look at these people, but they also, I think, get a flavor of the time itself along with that individual. And that's just amazing to be able to look at all of the time itself in which these pictures were taken. Very, very, very interesting. And again, ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with David Petruccia. He is a prolific author, has had many accolades, was the winner of the Casey Award and the F.C. Lane Award, has authored or edited over 30 books. And you can find his website at www.davidpetruccia.com. You know, David, is there in your mind an overarching theme or characteristic that would sort of embody an individual like Calvin Coolidge?
Economy in government, modesty. One of the things he said, he helped, he was was very forceful in dealing with the Boston police strike of 1919, and people said, you know, you have to let the workers, the police, striking policemen, back on the force. And he says, no, I will not. And it appeared that that might be the wrong political decision. And his advisors said, you know, you may not be reelected this fall if you do this. And he just looked up at him and he said, it is not essential for me to hold public office. And what he meant by that is that a lot of these politicians think they must hold on to power to hold on to power. It doesn't matter what they accomplish or what they stand for. They fool themselves into thinking that they will eventually do something right or principled down the road if only they sell out every other principle along the way. Calvin Coolidge did not believe in that. In an age where so few people are able to articulate conservative principles and limited government principles, not only did he articulate them so well, but he implemented them. He dared to implement them.
Wow. Very, very interesting. I think very, very poignant, and a blueprint that our politicians today behoove them to follow. And I think you're right. I think especially when we look today, we see so many politicians that look at a term and are already gauging how they can get into the next term. And it's quite often the positioning of their platform and what they do with different special interest groups and so on is gauged to that. And I've always wished in my mind here, being someone that really got into politics probably in the 80s, was that our politicians would come in and say, I'm going to be a one-termer. I'm going to think like a one-termer. I'm going to do the most that I can and maintain my character. And if it means one term, so be it. Like Coolidge would say, I'm not required to be in office, but I am required to have character. And
right.
And I'm going to put that first. Very interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been speaking to David Petrucha. He is the author of Silent Cal's Almanac, The Homespun Wit and Wisdom of Vermont's Calvin Coolidge. You can find this book, folks, at all your major book outlets. We have it linked up for our Conscience of Kansas listeners at our website at www.ibbotsonusa.com. And so, folks, you can find it there and check it out if you're so interested. I found it to be a very interesting book. I'm still consuming some of the parts of it and going through this very lengthy and interesting photo album in the back that is just page by page. It's just very, very educational. And David Petrucha, again, we want to thank you for coming on the Conscience of Kansas radio program. I think it's been educational and intellectually stimulating. And we want to make our radio program a continuous outlet for your books. When you have something come up, just let us know. And we want to thank you for coming on the Conscience of Kansas radio program.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank David Petrucha for being our guest on the Conscience of Kansas radio program today to speak about his book, Silent Cal's Almanac. We also want to thank our special guest in David Woodard coming to talk to us today about his book, Why We Whisper, Restoring Our Right to Say It's Wrong. And again, we've had such wonderful guests. We sure appreciate them coming on. And we also want to thank our guests we had talk about just what's going on with McCain and Sarah Palin, John McCain in Macho Sauce production with 20-pound sledge, and very interesting stuff. We really appreciate their time to lay it out there, no matter who may take offense by it. We also want to remind you guys that next week is our second annual Halloween special on the Conscience of Kansas radio program. Now, if you want to get in on the Democrat monster name game, your time is drawing to a close. You have to send an email to our master website at ibbotson91.9@gmail.com. If anybody doesn't know that last name, it's spelled IBBETSON 91.9@gmail.com. Give us your first name and state. Give us your liberal or Democrat, because basically I can't tell the difference between the two, and what monster they look like. We're going to take in the top 20, folks. We're taking new ones from last time, and so we're going to throw out any duplicates. We've had some very good submissions. I'm very appreciative of those submissions, but there's still chance and time to get your submission in, and we look forward to doing that. We will also be doing political nightmares. That's right, when political dreams go bad. It's going to be very good. Last year, we had the political nightmares where Ted Nugent fought the Medusa creature in the House of Horrors. It was just wonderful. We had a very good time. And so we invite you to partake of that, our Halloween special next week, October 28th, on the Conscience of Kansas radio program. All right, we're going to head out, and we're a little bit over today, but you can never get too much of a good thing. It's like going to Dairy Queen and getting an extra scoop of ice cream on your cone for free. Who can complain? It's all good. And we want to tell you folks, as always, whenever we share conservative values, we tend to anger some folks. They don't understand, or they get mad, or we rub them raw. And what you do is you send an email to ibbotson91.9@gmail.com. Tell me what your situation is. Vent. Get your anger out. Whatever makes you feel better. And I'm happy to take them. Happy to respond to them. Get about 150 a week to the Conscience of Kansas radio program. And we appreciate it. Just try to stay on the issues if possible. And we're going to send you out with a song by the Wright Brothers, dealing with liberal anger and talking about what about the issues. My name is Paul A. Ibbotson. You've been listening to the Conscience of Kansas radio program, bringing you the best political talk to the beautiful flatlands of Kansas and beyond. We'll see you next week.
Guitar, and I say what I believe for other people who think just like me. You get all up in arms when you hear the words I sing and send messages for me to read. I gave a lot of thought to everything that you've been saying. Once I got past the cussing and the hate you were conveying, I tried to be objective when you said you wish I'd die. I got your point but couldn't help but see you were ignoring the truth behind our songs are so predictable and boring. Thank you for the interest, now I've got a question for you. What about the issues? How can hearing someone else's views make you mad enough to spit?